Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We are off and running. It is the 31st day of July, 2017. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you'll find us merrily chatting away in the Horn chat room for the 3 hours during which the program is live, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, yes. And it's easy to get into. It's there. It's for you. It's free. And it's a real hoot. Getting here on time before the tardy bell could even ring. We don't have one. Well, you'll find Labor Man, Silent R. Lamar, V.T. Blom. And, of course, midweek utility pinch hit chat room moderator Steve from Georgistan. All around great guy. Yes, so if you pick yourself out a screen name and a password, that's who will be there to greet you for the moment, although there will be more wandering by as the program continues. It is the last day of July 2017, as noted, and I have happy news. We have met the July funding goals. We have licked the Lithuanian, we have nudged the Norsky, and we are go for liftoff on August, starting tomorrow. Program notes? Yes, there are always program notes, or sometimes, not always, but this program, tomorrow's program, and Wednesday's program will all be only 2 hours long. The 6 to 9 p.m. caveat does not apply this Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, because I'll shut this thing down. I will shut this thing down at 8 p.m. and reset everything and retool everything and upload the program file and all the fun things that have to happen after the end of the program, so that beginning at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, well, I can substitute for Mike Malloy. He and Kathy are away for the week. And hopefully, they're having a wonderful time. So, you know, there's a certain, there's a certain wistfulness that attends the month of August, which used to be, I forget what its name was in the Roman calendar until the grandnephew of Julius Caesar, a sickly, skinny kid by the name of Octavian, succeeded to the head of the empire. And as a matter of honor to him, it became, after they gave him the name, because Octavian, you know, not terribly impressive, so they just said that he was Caesar Augustus. Mm-hmm. And thus we find ourselves facing the month of August. just like July is named after the divine Julius. It used to just be a number. Just like, well, this, okay, so that makes sense. July was Quintilis, and August was Sextilis. So this is the 31st day of Quintilis. We're facing the first day of Sextilis, the sixth month, which is now, because he must have been mighty August, because we still hang on to the name for his month. Right? Yeah. So that's where we are. That's just our little boring wandering, little digression into the fields of history. Anyway, today, tomorrow, the 31st and the 1st, and the 2nd of August, I'll be subbing for Mike Malloy and Kathy. And I really am. I'm subbing for both of them because Kathy produces and Mike talks. Well, I both talk and produce. So there's that. And then Thursday and Friday are just, you know, ordinary days. Just plain old ordinary broadcast days. However, it's the week after that's the real program node. Come Monday, if everything works out, come Monday, I won't be here. I won't be here Monday through Friday. For the first time in over 12 years of broadcasting, Agnes and I are taking a vacation. That's the plan. All brought to fruition, of course, by our buddy Scott over in Svenska, Sweden, who put up a have a week on me. And encourages others to join in that effort. And if everything just works out right, we'll be out of here. And I will try to be disconnected from this entire process, you know, just to sort of recharge, reboot, that sort of thing. Hopefully, posting some photographs to Twitter and Facebook along the way. And you can follow the journey if you want. You, of course, you gotta follow me on Facebook and Twitter. Over on Facebook, by the way, you know, there's levels of following involved. There's just following, and then there's see posts from first. If you want to make sure that you get all the program notes and updates and things like that, you need to make me, Bob Kincaid, and that's what I am on Facebook, just Bob Kincaid. You need to make sure that I'm a see posts from first selection. You can't have a whole bunch of them, but if I'm one of them, that way you know that if I post something, you get it, and you'll see it in your feed. Because otherwise, God only knows how those algorithms work. I don't think there's anything quite like that on Twitter. It's just at Bob Kincaid. So that's pretty much everything. Thank you, Ralphs in the chat room saying, I hope you can go on vacation. Bob hugs. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you so much. I hope we can too. And thanks to those who are helping to make it possible. So that's where everything stands. Another announcement. Do you know what Patreon is? Patreon. It's a fundraising platform whereby people can support creators of content. Painters and sculptors and poets and musicians and actors and comedians and radio broadcasters. Well, for a lot of years, I've heard, gosh, Bob, I really want to support the horn, but I hate that blankety blank 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 blankety blank 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 PayPal. Well, maybe this is a step. I hope this is a step. I mean, that's what the whole campaign's about. I hope that this is a step toward creating the far-out, fabulous, fortitudinous, fearsome, ferocious 400 that we've been talking about for quite some time. 400 people at 10 bucks a piece subscribing to keep the horn on the air. And that's how it's... So if you don't want to subscribe via PayPal, that's cool. But there's a subscription set up now at patreon.com, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/Bob Kincaid, K-I-N-C-A-I-D. And so if it's the PayPal thing that's been holding you up on a subscription, use the Patreon. And, of course, as is the case for new subscribers, you'll get at the $10 level a month, you get the bumper sticker. At the $20 level of the month, you get the two bumper stickers. And, of course, you get on-air shout-outs and mentions as a fundamental supporter of this liberal, progressive, non-commercial, advertising-free broadcast effort at creating conversation radio. I hope it will bring in new members of the community as well. Because, well, the more people who are involved in this progressive conversation, the more people participating in the resistance, the greater the likelihood it is that we will eventually find ourselves free of the madness in which our country is presently locked. Ah, okay, thank you. Thank you, Steve, in New York. In other words, Patreon is a usurper and probably a Kenyan Muslim pro-Sharia fifth column. Gosh, I don't know. That wasn't there in the disclaimers, but, well, you never know. I'm sure that there are probably right-wing people who are using Patreon, too. Ugh, yuck. But it's there, it's easy, you know. And hopefully it will be put to good use. And, you know, maybe down the road we'll work on some other kinds of premiums. I'm working on some T-shirt designs and things like that. So just if you want to, and I'd say we've probably got the equivalent of about 60 monthly subscribers right now. And so that would leave 40 to get to 100, and then, you know, 340 to get to 400. And by the way, if you're already a subscriber via PayPal, there is no need to do anything whatsoever. Nothing. Nada. Leave it alone. I did this mainly to provide a platform for people who hate PayPal with the heat of a million suns. So there's that. Eventually, you know, we can add in things like a horn coffee mug as premiums. We've got a few of those sitting around. And could conceivably do more. Who knows? There's all kinds of different things to help make this a little bit more sustainable on the front end. So if you are, tell your friends and neighbors. Progressive media needs your support. This progressive media, because we don't have a billionaire Russian oligarch to keep it going, or a dodgy Russian website. And if you happen to... man, that was beautiful. Did you catch John Oliver last night? I didn't even mean to, and I wound up watching it, and just sat there transfixed. It was amazing. for some reason, after going through the manifest screw-ups of the Trump administration, Trump regime, sorry, Gene, sorry, News Ninja Gene, Trump regime, he veered slightly right, and it turned out that the bulk of the program was all about Alex Jones. And what a program it was. You know, this program really is funded strictly by listener contributions. And, you know, there's no ads or anything like that. Alex Jones has put together a $50 million a year broadcast empire that runs on the back of cheesy videos about conspiracies. You remember the part monkey, part jellyfish hybrids that are being brought over through Hong Kong. Remember that one the other day? Yeah. Let's see. Then there's the chemicals in the water that turn frogs gay. Right, yeah. And it's all supported through the sales of what, for all intents and purposes, you would call patent medicines. Male virility potions. Female, well, that wouldn't be virility, would it? Weird, no. Femininity potions. Mm-hmm. Paleo drinks, and John Oliver focused on this one. Chocolate flavored paleo chicken bone goop. Yeah. Wowzer. $50 million. I don't even want $50 million. Would you want $50 million? I mean, really think about it. I mean, That's Rush Limbaugh money. You start doing $50 million a year. You start doing $50 million a year, and the next thing you know, you're going to be sending the maid out with your undocumented immigrant maid with a cigar box full of untraceable cash to bring you back a cigar box full of street opioids. It's not good for you. I mean, you've got a Gulfstream 5 to maintain. Those things are a pain in the ass. You've got a pilot to pay, a maintenance staff, a hangar. Oy. And then there's the Maybach. That's good. Hoghead in the chat room points out, a friend of mine runs a Facebook page called Alex Jones's Unopened Bottle of Thorazine. Oh, yeah. GK pointing out. And we, Alex Jones, we can't forget about Agenda 21. No, we sadly can't. We can't forget about that. No, we can't. Let's see. And Jeremy in Vermont wants me to list this one more time. The Patreon address is Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, Patreon.com/Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D. Not a lot of flash and dash there. Haven't posted any videos yet. Mainly because me and video, I mean, isn't, well, I'm no good at editing video. Okay, let's just put it that way. And you point a camera at me, and I go all, I'm okay with a microphone. It's the camera that it makes me get all, yep, anyway. But there we have it. An humble attempt to simply fund this program without having to constantly talk about fundraising. Because wouldn't that be nice? Mm-hmm. Thank you. Carol in Oregon, getting us started this evening. Thank you very kindly, Carol. Getting us started on August, no less. Yay, thank you, Carol. Thank you very much. And, you know, that's the other thing. Everybody gets a mention when you help out. Brother Deacon Gerald, this is just a public service announcement. Brother Deacon Gerald, chair of the Cathedral of Common Sense Building and Grounds Committee, sent me a note just a little bit before airtime. In case you were wondering, if you bought milk, okay, this is important. If you bought milk on the day that Anthony Scaramucci was hired as White House Communications Director, your milk is still fresh. Yeah, it turns out the mooch screwed the pooch. And he ain't no communications director no more, and he's gonna have to go back to your export-import bank there. Yeah, which is exactly what's happened. Say what you want about this administration. You know, long time ago, it became traditional for coal miners to take their vacations once they got them. Of course, they had to fight and bleed and die to even have something like that. But once it got to where coal miners had vacations, a tradition developed whereby the miners' vacation happened in August. And for a variety of theoretical reasons, a lot of miners, in order to supplement their incomes, had gardens, so there was canning to be done, and there was, work around the house needed to be done. But it developed into a sort of social thing whereby miners would go on vacation in August. And even after my father took his little family to Alabama, he would still set up his vacations away from the furnace in August to coincide with his friends back here who had theirs in August as well, so that they could have some sit-down time together and think about the good old days, which were not that far past and not that good. But there's also the August vacation in Washington, D.C., which has its own set of reasons, malaria being one of them. And so for some reason or another, the month of August, which is, of course, the last full month of summer, fall begins what? The autumn begins the third week of September? And this summer has flown by. But there's a sort of get out of town ishness to August, and that's part of why school starts back in. I think, for instance, I think around here, the first day of school is the 14th day of August. High school football teams will begin practicing either today or tomorrow in advance of the season. Preseason drills have begun at colleges and universities all over the country. I remember high school football two-a-days in the sopping wet, scorching heat of August in North Alabama, and it was a special kind of hell. I don't think they're allowed to do those anymore. Tends to kill a kid every now and then. And, you know, the scorching brutality of a muggy August is only going to become more so as we ponder the effects of climate change. But traditionally, August has been a getaway time. Used to be that that from West Virginia down to Myrtle Beach would be a steady stream of cars with West Virginia license plates and Eastern Kentucky license plates. Myrtle Beach being the favored beach destination of Central Appalachia, because oddly enough, from where I sit, it's actually less time on the road to go to Myrtle Beach than it is to go to Virginia Beach. And Myrtle Beach is, of course, much more fun, I guess. Hoghead points out, Chiefs training camp going on now in St. Joseph, Missouri. Fans paying money to watch them practice. You know, that used to be free. And I guess, you know, thanks to Jim Justice, the New Orleans Saints, and tell me this makes any sense, the New Orleans Saints have their preseason practices at the Greenbrier, just one county away from me here in West Virginia. So, you know, that's what August is. A downtime. Not much happening. Kind of boring, really. Not anymore. Oh, no. Not with this bunch. Not with the Trump regime. See, I can remember and do it, News Ninja Gene. Not with the Trump regime in power. Every day is the day that the circus comes to town, as long as Donald J. Trump remains the God only knows why president. Oh, we know why. Hello, economic anxiety right wingers, Klansmen, neo Nazis, skinheads. Yeah, hi. Yeah, we know why. But I'm almost having never gone away. I'm right nervous about all the great stories they're going to break starting a week from today and running through a week from Friday. But I'll just have to... I'll have to I'll have to learn to live with it. Or tweet about it or something. Assuming that Agnes has not taken away my... Because unlike the President of the United States, my tweeting phone can be taken away from me. And, yeah. Randy pointing out, some provinces in Canada do it right with a holiday on a Monday in August. Funny, in the bedroom community where I grew up near Boston, school used to start close to Labor Day. Well, and before the advent of air conditioning in schools in Alabama, it would have been simply brutal to start school, second week of August. Yeah, thanks, Silent R. Lamar. Suck it up, Bob. Life not fair. I know. But, I mean, look at what happened today. So, I mean, late last week, you get the defenestration of Rance Priebus as chief of staff. immediately, John Kelly, former four-star Lieutenant General of the Marine Corps, John Kelly, is announced as the replacement. He was not, and of course, not subject to any sort of congressional approval. He's strictly a political appointment. He has no actual powers within the executive branch. He's just an employee of the President of the United States, the Chief of Staff is. And so he was sworn in this morning. Sometime around maybe 9, 9:30, something like that. And I know this because Agnes and I were watching, we had been watching that program that is a deep source of shame for us both. We feel like we need to shower in bleach after we've watched it. And then we followed into the first hour's news. Agnes likes Stephanie Ruhle's presentation style. But Stephanie Ruhle wasn't working today. Apparently she got the day off. And so Chris Jansing was filling in for her. Agnes just loved Chris Jansing's dress today. She's got the eye of a fashionista, my Agnes does. And she would have looked great in that dress today. Absolutely. Viking warrior princesses look good in stuff like that. But anyway, we were watching coverage from MSNBC. And they were talking about how Kelly was being sworn in. And then they cut away to a live shot of Comrade Kumquat sitting in the photo op setting chair there in the White House that they usually, and where the other chair is usually filled by, say, some brutal autocratic dictator from the Middle East or something along those lines. But lo and behold, in the brutal autocratic dictator chair, instead sat former four-star Marine Lieutenant General, 45 years service, John Kelly, formerly of Boston. And he looked like, he was sitting on a bed of fire ants. I mean, he was uncomfortable, and he squirmed, and he kind of hunched. You know, he didn't have that whole ramrod straight, I'm a goddamn Marine posture going for him. He was kind of trying to slunk down, trying to kind of disappear inside the shirt collar of his blue suit. And Agnes picked up on it right away and said, man, his body language is a train wreck. And I said, yeah, it is. I wonder what's up. She said, he looks like an egg-sucking dog. We say things like that here in the hills. We describe people as looking like an egg-sucking dog. And we talked to each other about why he would be so... I said, honey, you know, he's a buttoned down, squared away Marine. This cannot be easy for him. He feels like he's serving his country, but by the time you get within 2.5 to 3 feet of Donald J. Trump, the icky pussy grabbing rays that just come off of that sick psychopathic freak can't help but make you squirm. And she said, no, there's something more to it than that. I'm telling you, honey, there's something more to it than that. And, you know, when Agnes tells me that, I pay attention. And, of course, because it's her job, it turns out that Agnes was right. Mm-hmm. Because there was something more to it. He was itching to get out of that chair, John Kelly was, and get to work. And you know what? He did. He no sooner shook Tangerine Tiberius's hand and said, "Yeah, yeah, nice talking to you. Yep, gotta go. Got work to do, got chief of staffing to do, got stuff to get attended to, gotta get things squared away and buttoned up and zipped up and four squared and hospital cornered and properly marine." And he was no sooner out the door and went down to his chief of staffing room. And apparently the first thing he did was fire DeMooch. Because if there was anybody in the entire Trump immediate orbit who said, who just screamed out, "I'm not squared away, I'm not buttoned up, I'm not hospital cornered, I'm not somebody you could trust with the carcass of a dead skunk, I'm so greasy you could fry chicken in my sweat, I buy just for men, just by the barrel." It was Anthony Scaramucci, the Mooch. And so, utilizing the famous tagline from his boss's days as a reality television semi-star, apparently the first thing he did, "You're fired." "Yeah, but, yeah, I mean, I'm DeMooch." "Yeah, you're DeMooch, who's on the street. Get along with you. Goodbye. Get out." And then, not trusting DeMooch not to try to, like, steal paperweights and shit, uniformed personnel then personally escorted the Mooch off of the White House grounds. No word yet on whether anybody hollered, "And don't come back!" And that was today. And that dominated the headlines. "Mooch, we hardly knew ye." Well, we knew enough. We knew enough to know, for instance, that he apparently sold his hedge fund Dodge to the Chinese at an inflated price, which the Chinese were happy to pay, because I guess somebody intimated to them that by paying DeMooch something above fair market value, that they might have, you know, enhanced access to the President of the United States. Kind of like Jared Kushner's sister went to the Chinese and said, "You know, I'm Jared Kushner's sister, and he's the son-in-law of the president. And you know, if you buy some property at our really skeevy, shitty, dodgy New Jersey condominiums, you know, you'll get a green card, because anybody who spends $400,000 on real property in the United States gets a green card. You want a green card, don't you? Don't you have some friends want a green card? Sure you do. Yeah, look, we've got this lovely 650 square foot of efficiency in a tower back behind a giant cesspool lagoon, and it can be yours for only $400,001. You want one of those, don't you?" Yeah, like that. But we'd learned a lot about DeMooch in the last week or so. like how a father to a kid at the tender age of 53 years old, and instead of going to be at the birth, he went with the Clementine Caligula to hang out with the Boy Scouts while his boss told the Boy Scouts stories about yacht orgies and how he texted his wife and said, "I will pray for the child." Yeah, I know. Ron and Raleigh with a note, subject line, Damooch. Talk about snake bit. Damooch's wife is divorcing his sorry ass because of his unbridled ambition and desire to be a part of the Dolt 45 administration. I keep forgetting to use Dolt 45. I need to work that in more often. Now he has neither a wife or a job. Damooch managed to be the shortest tenured communications director by one day, beating out Jack Kohler of the St. Ronnie administration. His only sin was to have been a member of the Jungenfolk back in the good old days. That would have been a recommendation in this dumpster fire of an administration. Ain't that the truth? But one day. But then again, you can also wonder how long John Kelly will last in the midst of this. I mean, hell, the guy may go on to be there for 3 more years and 6 months. But that's not the way the smart odds makers are betting. You get squared down and ramrod straight and squared away and hospital cornered and semper fi and it that just can't last. And I think that was that sort of colicky, gassy look on his face, John Kelly's, this morning, knowing that he was just doing the breaststroke, you know, the breaststroke where, you know, every time your arms come up, your head has to go back down under the liquid. Yeah, he's just doing the breaststroke through, there's that second reference to a cesspool this evening. Mm-hmm. And I had mentioned to Lizardo, who's in the chat room right now, Lizardo sent along a story earlier this evening, or a question, you know, "Bob, will you have anything to talk about given how dull the day has been?" I said, "Hell, you know, I've been worried about it all day long. I may just have to start reciting dirty limericks." And I got right out of the gate with one, too. There once was a guy named Damooch, who with John Kelly had screwed Damooch. That's as far as I got, though, because I was kind of busy at the time. Okay, so I've got a technical issue here. Terry, chairman of the Amherst, Massachusetts Horn Committee, says, "I'll try to keep picking you up, driving back to Amherst from northern Vermont. You'd add so much to this road trip if I could." Is there an issue with any of the online platforms? I haven't heard any. Oh, thanks, Hoghead. Hoghead says, "We'll get a writing staff together for you, Bob." Yeah. So that's, I mean, that's kind of the day. Ron and Raleigh asks, "Do you think Damooch uses Axe body spray?" Uses it? I think he submerges himself in it every day. He probably smells like what a classless person thinks a classy guy smells like. It's sad, though, in a way. Donald J. Trump is DeMooch's hero. He really is. He's his hero. He wanted to work for DeMooch so bad. It was all he could think about. Working, you know, for Donald J. Trump. And now he's going to have to spend his day, go back to spending his days grifting away at the Export-Import Bank. Which, incidentally, from time to time, your Congress there, even your Republicans, will holler, should probably be shut down. I can remember when we weren't so crazy about the Import-Export Bank ourselves, because it seemed like mostly the money from the Export-Import Bank was used to funnel money to other countries to build coal-fired power plants, and I'm assuming it still is. Jesus, much more of this, and I might as well, it'll just be Bugs Bunny all night long. She was the daughter of Rosie O'Grady, the regular old-fashioned girl. Hey, look, I'm dancing. No more. It's not going to be easy stopping with DeMooch, but it's a necessity. Let's see, just checking a couple of technical things right now. Making sure that, for instance, the stress line is connected via Bluetooth. And it is. Oh, and by the way, we have our very first, no kidding, really, I wouldn't pull your leg about something like this, Patreon subscriber. We're off and running. We have our very, thank you to Jeremy in Vermont, who wanted to be the very first, and jumped out there and is. Thanks, Robert in Australia, for letting me know that TuneIn's okay in Australia. So that means it's probably okay everywhere, but in, okay, that makes sense too. Jeremy pointing out, car rides from New Hampshire to Vermont do not often have strong cell service with all the mountains. I doubt it's an audio program issue, just bad cell service. Why, that almost sounds like West Virginia. Yeah. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa and Randy in PA, all running 5x5, and Randy confirms the same. Good. So that means that we should be good to roll with More Ann Monday, because this last day of Quinctilis, named for the divine Julius, is a Monday. And therefore, that means it's a day that is dedicated to Morans. And usually, we dedicate the Moran dedication goes out to, in particular, right-wing Morans. Because usually, we don't have any problem finding them. It's like they queue up for Mondays over the course of the weekend. But and I'm not gonna we'll leave the Calliope out of it this evening. But I'm just gonna. This has been sitting in the stack for a few days, and I'm just gonna get it out of the way. Oh, by the way, in regards to the ongoing housekeeping, perhaps, you know, tidying up being done by squared away Chief of Staff John Kelly. Ron, in the monsoon season north, up somewhere north of the, you know, U.S.-Canadian border, says, I'm betting that either Kellyanne or Bannon, or both, are gone by Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Yeah, that's another one that won't be going away, the mental image of Steve Bannon self-fellating. I think I saw Stephen Colbert opining on it, who said, well, if Steve Bannon could do that, he'd never leave home. Which, of course, was a riff on a really, really old George Carlin bit, History of Comedy, in which George Carlin asked, this was back when he was doing that kind of humor, before he was quite as political as he later became, but he used to just be a kind of a shock comedian because he used dirty words. And in an early bit, I forget which album it comes from, but he asked, why do dogs lick their balls? And the punchline wound up being, if guys could do that, they'd never leave home. Including a line like, thanks, Fred, I'll just stay here in my closet all day licking my balls. But that, yeah, Steve Bannon, who, incidentally, in case you didn't know it, has a portrait of himself painted as Napoleon. Right down, I think, to the putting his hand over his stomach thing, which was big in the late 18th, early 19th century. And so, I don't know. DeMooch may wind up playing the sort of role of someone who just, maybe a deus ex machina, in a sort of greasy Grecian formula kind of way, who just swings out of the wings, completely rearranges the plot, and then swings back away before you hardly even realize that Zeus was out there. Only not Zeus. He obviously affected Rents Priebus's, and won't we miss that name? No. He affected Rents Priebus's ability to go on having a job. Maybe Bannon too? Who knows? Wowzer, that's very cool. We have two Patreon subscribers now. Thank you. Thank you to Eric in Pennsylvania, Bamistan, who just subscribed via Patreon. And remember, if you're already happily subscribing at PayPal, stay right where you are. No need to change. This is just, yeah. But thank you, Eric. Thank you. But it's Moran Monday, like I said, and while we do reserve Moran Monday for the right wing, I just want to get this one out of the way, please. This goes back to a couple of weeks. Goes back a couple of weeks to an appearance by former Vice President Al Gore, who popped over to talk with Stephen at the Late Show. And he explained something that a lot of us had been wondering about for several months. He's out on the trail, promoting his film, An Inconvenient Sequel, Truth to Power, which is well worth the watching. But along the way, he said, I went to Trump Tower after the election, and I remember talking about this. I was saying, you know, look, I'm cutting Al some slack. We're just going to say that Al is the eternal optimist, and Al can do that, and we'll, you know. But I also recall at the time saying, you know, this is an act of futility. But he explained to Stephen Colbert, I went to Trump Tower after the election. I thought that there was a chance he would come to his senses. And then he added, but I was wrong. Al Gore then added, a lot of our most important governors and mayors and business leaders said, we're still in the Paris Agreement and we're going to meet the commitments of the country regardless of what Donald Trump tweets. But I wanted to get that one out of the stack. Because, among other things, it is not every day that not every day that somebody who has had been as near to power or had as much power as Al Gore had, who will say, I was wrong. So I give credit to Al Gore for coming to his senses, because there was no way that Donald Trump was ever going to come to his. You have to have senses available to come to them. Right? So, you know, kind of good on you, Al, but please don't... Don't buy any more magic beans from anybody who says, mighty skinny cow there you got. You want to sell it for some magic beans? This'll really do. No more magic beans, Al, please. And then, courtesy of Lizardo, a little something something else. From Grist. Manola Sequeira writing today about something I never knew about. I'll bet you didn't either. Did you know there is an Environmental Protection Agency museum? I don't necessarily know what's in it. Maybe a stuffed dead bird that got poisoned by DDT. Maybe a signed original copy of Rachel Carson's Silent Spring. Maybe in like a lead-lined container, a hunk of dirt from the Love Canal. Or a glop of light sweet crude from the gathered from the Alaska coastline, or gathered from Prudhoe Bay from grounding of the Exxon Valdez. You think I'm kidding, don't you? Yes, you do. But no, there is. There's an EPA museum. It's a one-room exhibit. It opened shortly before the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini was inaugurated. And no, what it really does is it tells... It tells the story of the EPA, and it also highlighted the Obama administration's attempts to curtail climate change. By the way, I saw a note earlier today. According to, let me see if I can get down to it here. Well, I don't see it, but some outfit predicted or posited that the Paris Climate Accords have only a 2% chance of succeeding in successfully mitigating CO2 level rise, sea level rise, you know, generally speaking, disaster. That in turn coincides with something that Dar Jamal posted over at Truthout. Headline, scientists warn of biological annihilation as warming reaches levels unseen for 115,000 years. Oh my, More Ann Monday just turned into another episode of Bob Kincaid, Little Ray of Sunshine. Leading off the article, Dar Jamal writes, Dateline, Camp 41, Brazilian Amazon, less than 30 years ago, the Earth's tropical rainforests held the carbon equivalent of half of the entire atmosphere. But as atmospheric CO2 has escalated along with the deforestation of so much of the tropics, that is no longer the case. Nevertheless, carbon stored in tropical rainforests is still significant. According to NASA, in the early 2000s, forests in the 75 tropical countries studied contained 247 billion tons of carbon. For perspective, about 10 billion tons of carbon is released annually to the atmosphere from combined fossil fuel burning and land use changes. This is one of the countless reasons why losing them would be catastrophic to life on Earth. I'm writing this dispatch just having emerged from the heart of the Amazon, the most biodiverse place on the planet. I was fortunate enough to spend some time with Tom Lovejoy, known as the godfather of biodiversity, at the famous Camp 41, which is filled with researchers and scientists. Throughout our conversations, Lovejoy emphasized the staggering amount of biological diversity in the Amazon, which has thousands upon thousands of species of trees, fish, birds, plants, and astronomical numbers of insect species. Wow. I mean, that's neat, right? But it goes on, and it details at great length. Dar Jamal this is an article. This is the real deal. This would go on for pages and pages and pages in a magazine. Among other things, Dar Jamal reaches the conclusion, a megadose of reality for all of us here on Earth, which would be, you know, as far as science can tell us, all of us. No humans out there on Norblap 9. There is no planet B. Earth's sixth mass extinction event is already well underway. The aforementioned event researchers are already referring to as causing the biological annihilation of wildlife, and that's already far more severe than previously feared. Charming, yes. Charming, no. It's going to take a lot to save this and many other species. And as a consequence, the shriek I emitted, when I read the Grist article. The display tells that this is the museum of the EPA. The display tells the history of the EPA while highlighting big Obama-era steps toward combating climate change, like the implementation of the Clean Power Plan and the signing of the Paris Agreement. In light of Trump's decisions to ditch both, the EPA, as displayed, isn't looking quite Trumpy enough. A career EPA official told the Washington Post that, in addition to a coal display, oh, sure as shit hope it's a clean coal display, Plans are underway to add controversial EPA Administrator Ann Gorsuch to the exhibit. Really? They're going to dig her up? Wax dummy? I mean, how? What? Was she cremated? Is she going to appear in an ashtray? Wonder how legal wunderkind Neil will feel about that. And expand on Trump areas of interest like the Superfund program, the Clean Power Plan, and Paris Agreement displays are already scheduled for removal. If you want a preview of the changes, current EPA officials have already put up a poster board that includes a photo of Pruitt shaking hands with miners and description that calls Trump's approach to the EPA back to the basics. Back to the basics of coal. Yay. Isn't that just lovely? Wow. Yeah, maybe they can borrow some murals from Ken Ham's Creation Museum or his Ark Park. You know, the murals that show gladiators fighting against dinosaurs. Why the all not, right? Oh, the stupid. It hurts us. But at 7 minutes past the hour, and big shout out to Brother Deacon Asa, who has become our third subscriber at Patreon. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Ron in Raleigh wants to know, is there a display in the EPA Museum of the flaming Cuyahoga River? Yeah, no. Give him a chance, though. Give him a chance. You know what would be really cool in the EPA Museum? A frack quake attraction for the kiddies. It's a room, and it'll have, like, one of those engines under that, like, moves, and the kids go in, and they get all shaken up. And then they're okay when they walk out, just like everybody is after a fracking quake. See, fracking is your friend. Right. Yeah. I just don't know. I don't think thoughts that deep. Randy in PA says, what do you bet that somewhere in the bowels of the earth, the U.S.'s Calcitron 7000, I thought it was the Uniplab, but never mind, has predicted a nuclear winter in our future so that global warming won't be our concern? Wow, hey, what an idea! Let's offset global warming with a nuclear winter. And then everything will just be temperate. It's kind of like when you get a little too worked up on coke and you fire up a little heroin just to sort of balance things out. Great. Because we got that too. The morons are trying to get us all worked up about the latest North Korean missile launch. It made it somewhere into the Sea of Japan, you know, again. But if you were watching the for-profit media graphics, you saw that they drew a red line from North Korea, and the next thing you know, the entire United States, all the way to Mobile Bay, was covered in red because it meant that Kim Jong Crazy Pants could nuke Burnt Corn, Alabama, or Busted Knuckle, Missouri, or Hooterville, or Wrong Way, Texas. Are you shaking in your boots yet? 'Cause see, you're supposed to be. But anyway, that's where we find ourselves with the program. At 11 minutes past the hour, if folks light up the phones, we've got about 45 minutes worth of conversation between now and time to shut down, so I can retool for being on the air on the Molloy program. You know how to reach the program. The stress line is area code 304-663-4676. The other line is 304-574-8178. And, of course, from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. All right? Oh, wait. Oh, my goodness. I mentioned a limerick, and the magic starts happening. Courtesy of good Todd down in South Carolina, Stan. There once was a guy named DeMooch who worked for a guy who grabbed cooch. He did too much coke, and then he misspoke, and now he's back on the hooch. I told you there was a reason for that cowbell. So if you want to engage in conversation, that's cool. Ring him up. We'll chat. Other than that, we've got more morans. I'm Bob. This is The Horn. I love this song. It's great for chair dancing.
I was a billboard. your peaceful oasis. You got it, you got it. This was a Pizza Hut, now it's all covered with daisies. You got it, you got it. I miss the honky tonks, Dairy Queens, and 7-Elevens. You got it, you got it. And as things fell apart, nobody paid much attention. You got it, you got it.
Forgive me, but I love that song. The Talking Heads, I don't know why I say forgive me, but I do. I love that song. Talking Heads, Nothing But Flowers, from a very, very long time ago. Long time ago indeed. First time I ever heard that, I was at Hilton Head Island, South Carolina. Yep. And it was, there's such great lines in there, especially, nobody paid much attention. And this is, what, the late 1980s, I think? Maybe the early 90s? And even then, David Byrne could see, because, I mean, that's essentially the problem. If when, you know, a million or 10 years from now, when the six-foot-tall race of sentient cockroaches begins to try to piece together how the hairless monkey people, whom, by the way, they will worship as gods, screwed everything up. That may be our epitaph. Nobody paid much attention. Yeah. Hey, let's run over and check in, because we haven't heard from her in a while. Let's run over and check in with Clarity. Hey, Clarity.
Hey, Bob, how are you doing?
I'm okay, you?
I called in because I had some good news to report after being on crisis mode for almost the full month of July. Got behind on my mortgage and applied to a couple different agencies to help me with that, and apparently I'd been approved through the place that I go for mental health services, but the person that was supposed to enact that support dropped the ball, and it got lost in the shuffle, and then my caseworker went on vacation. It just, all these things that were, you know, it's like dominoes falling the wrong way away from you, you know, and you can't catch up.
Right, yeah.
And finally, I don't know, Friday, I just said, you know, I've got to do something. And I heard from the mortgage company going, you know, WTF, what's going on, and because I told them that there was supposed to be, you know, some rental security support to run me up to the 1st of October. And it was the first payment I had missed, you know, since I moved in here. So that was good. That was good news. And the other good news today was Saturday morning I fell off my wedges and sprained my foot. But I thought I broke it. Yeah, I think I posted a picture on Facebook. It's a nice plum purple.
I was going to say it's that lovely ankle purple. That's probably it should probably be its own color, ankle purple.
Yeah. Anyway, the doctor went and got X-rays today, which makes for the story as I carry on here. The doctor assured me that it wasn't broken, and I said, "Oh, it's just a sprain." And he said, and he smiled and said, "Yeah, it's just a sprain."
And the next line that usually comes after that clarity is, "You do know that a sprain is worse than a break, right?"
Well, I already know that. I already know that, but at least I can touch it without feeling like I'm dislocating, you know, a broken bone.
Okay, so it's time to fess up. What were you doing when you fell off your wedgies?
I was hustling out to take my sunrise photo because I overslept, and the light woke me up, and by the time I got out the door, I hadn't had my coffee. Usually I wake up before the sunrise, you know, I have enough time to, you know, do it in a meditative way. But it was just...
Yeah, I enjoy your sunrise photos on Twitter.
I do too, and I do a little meditation, you know, a little breathing meditation with it, and... You know, to really calm myself down and just get in touch with what's here and not get too caught up with what's being projected in, you know, back at me from the media or whatever, you know. Anyway, as I was walking down the sidewalk, I went a little bit more to the right than to the left and went over the front, and my fourth metatarsal torqued out.
Ouch.
Yeah. So anyway, so that was the good news. And this morning before I got the good news, I was remembering Oakland for some reason. I lived there, you know, for 5 years before I moved across the, you know, the channel to Alameda. I lived in the Bay Area for 10 years. And Barbara Lee was my representative for those first 5 years. And then Pete Stark, other five. You know, you cross the Alameda Bridge and you go into a different congressional district. Anyway, I wanted to talk to somebody in Congress, and I get tired of talking to Walden. It's like, you know, it's like, oh, it's that wacko from Hermiston.
Right.
So I actually called Barbara Lee's office and had a really good conversation. I said, I put in my old zip code so that I could get through to you, because now it's an automated switchboard and you can't ask for a specific congressman. You have to put in your zip code.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I said, you know, I live in Greg Walden's district. I said, you know who he is, right? And there was silence. And I said, yeah, I know. And I said, I just called because I used to live in the San Antonio neighborhood in East Oakland. And I know Barbara Lee's one of the best people in Oakland. And
she sure is.
And she voted against the only person that had the courage to stand against Bush's, you know, false war.
And you know what else? She was an early signatory to the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. Didn't bat an eyelash.
She's a good Christian. She looks out for the less fortunate. You know? And that's really what government should be there for, is for the people that can't do it on their own, and to build structures that support people and keep communities together, keep families together, you know?
Exactly.
But anyway, I just told him, I said, you know, I didn't want to call Walden's office again and feel like it was wasted. I wanted to be heard. I just wanted to be heard today. And I said, thank you for that tweet Friday concerning, you know, General Kelly being the chief of staff now. it's very blatantly obvious that we are militarizing the government.
That's absolutely true. We were certainly militarizing the executive branch, and there is reason to fear or to at least be deeply concerned about the fact that the three most powerful people around Donald Trump right now are three generals.
Yep.
I mean, yeah. there was a reason for putting, for instance, and you know, James Mattis at defense. There was a reason that Ashton Carter was the previous Secretary of Defense. There's a reason for having people at defense who are civilians who indeed are not military personnel, because it reinforces the idea of civilian control of the military.
Absolutely.
And so now you've got the Chief of Staff is a Marine general. The head of the Defense Department is a Marine general. And I'm not sure what Masterson was. I think he was an Army general, wasn't he?
Yes. Yeah.
But when you're into that realm, Clarity, you're in Gertrude Stein territory. A general is a general is a general is a general.
Yeah, and, you know, Dr. Strangelove keeps running through my head.
Oh, mine, you know? Too. Over the weekend, I said, you know, it's hard not to look at these three and realize that one of them is going to wind up being General Jack D. Ripper, and the other one's going to be General Buck Blastoff Turgidson.
Yeah, Turgidson.
Wow. You just lay right there under the tanning lamp, honey, and old Bucky will be back before you can say blast off. Jesus. Well,
we have our strategic reserve of Viagra, so we can withstand just about any war.
Yeah, well, you know, we spend $84 million a year on Viagra, so. And by the way, PolitiFact kind of looked that up, and it's pretty much true. We spend 10 times as much on Viagra in the Pentagon budget as we do for you know, transgender medical care.
Yeah, well, and I, you know, hope that I'm giving back what has been given me, you know, a second life. It means a lot, and I still have things that I know I'm going to write, you know.
Yeah.
And so that's what keeps me going, and I did reconnect with an old friend of mine, so I have a plan C now. I don't have any family, really, to speak of, so I'm just making sure that there might be somebody around that I can share rocking chairs with.
Nice. Well done.
It is. Well, she was my sweetheart in fourth grade.
Aw, darn it. That's beautiful.
And we went all the way through school together. We were in choir together. We were in jazz choir together. We were on swim team during the summer times together. And, you know, it's like, wow. So after all these years, because she didn't make it to our 40th class reunion. Yeah, it's good, because I was feeling like I was being missed a lot, and you know, just losing some dear friends. I went to a memorial for my neighbor last Friday. She was 53 and died of metastatic brain cancer, and just had her first grandkid, you know, born this year. So it was very exceptionally sad.
I know a little bit of how you feel. I just found out this weekend that a very, very dear friend of long standing of mine is in a bad way.
Yeah.
And it's hard to handle.
Oh, it is. It is. We don't realize that, you know, which Thich Nhat Hanh keeps reminding us of, that beingness, that oneness. You know, we're connected with all things if we're not totally numbed out or totally distracted by, you know.
Yeah, a little mindful, and this may sound trite. I don't mean for it to sound that way, Clarity.
It needs to be repeated.
A little mindfulness goes a long way.
Yes, it does, especially if if you start with the right effort and the right intention, your path gets easier because you practice that.
Well, it's going to sound totally trite, but this weekend...
Stop apologizing.
This weekend, I said last week that... And, of course, this is Bob Kincaid, consumer of meat. But I said before the weekend that this weekend I was going to see how the new smoker handles chicken and ribs. And I did. And it wasn't so brutally hot and humid as it has been. It's beautiful yesterday, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
And I was out in the yard, and I caught myself saying, you know what? Maybe you should get the weed eater out and go and hack at some weeds. And dadgummit, it's rained so much, we're going to have to get after the yard real soon. And, how about that? I think we need to replace that piece of soffit there. And in fairly short order, my bliss was in real danger, and I was able to pull back and say, wait a minute, this is your happy time. You're sitting here monitoring the fire and you know, making something that Agnes and Ferg are gonna enjoy the heck out of eating, and
cook while you cook.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And just, you know, and I did at one point. I literally took a step back and took a big inhale and a big exhale and just tried to relax a little bit. And the bliss came back.
Well, the only real place we actually enjoy joy is in the present, in the moment. We can't enjoy, you know, it's not real. If it, you know, joy happens now. The joy happens now. It happens now.
Yeah, because the past is over, and the future, and anything you're trying to enjoy in the future is anticipatory, and anything you're trying to enjoy in the past is nostalgia.
Anxiety and regret.
That too.
And you're in that, hopefully, that white hole in time between them, which is the so-called now. Yeah.
And I'm glad you say so-called, because, you know, the now is pretty hard to get a handle on, too. Because it's always either getting here or leaving here.
Yeah. But, well, that's the beauty of music. When you get lost in it, you're still entrained in time and space by the capsule of the music itself. And that's why I like music when I'm, you know, when my pain is overcoming me, that I get lost in the music and I forget completely the misery that my brain tells me my body's in, you know.
Right.
And I'm very grateful, because the more I develop myself as an artist, the more I can use it for my own, you know, health and well-being, and hopefully that transmits to others.
Well, I think it probably does. I've seen, you know, the way you tweeted out to multiple sources, and it's got to reach its intended purpose along the way. I see him and I go, yep, ooh, nice, because by the time you're tweeting your sunrise, you know, I'm well into my day over here on the other side of the continent.
Okay. Well, I think of you, Bob, because I know how hard it is to be a prophet every day and speak about what's going on, because it's kind of ugly, you know, but yet there is a need for prophecy. And that's what I said to Barbara Lee's assistant, was that keep speaking the truth, because it needs to be spoken, and we are backing you, and the one is backing you. This is the work that needs to be done. Keep up.
Well, thank you, Clarity. Thank you very kindly indeed. So you're let me just you're off the wedgies for a while.
Yeah, no wedgies and no toe shoes. No ballet work.
So you're on the injured reserve from the bar.
Yeah, no lead ballerina work this month. But I do have 6 gigs this month, so I'm gonna be working musician, pretty good. I mean, for me.
I mean, yeah, that is. But I mean, can you? Yeah, I mean, I guess you get a good chair and you can sit there and just blast away on the sax, right?
Oh yeah, I can do everything and I can stand up and get around. It's just I can't do anything where I'm gonna have to balance on one foot or something. You know, I'm still favoring it a little bit, but.
Yeah, but you don't want to be going off on like an homage to Charlie Parker, and yell "son of a bitch" that hurts in the middle of it or anything. I mean, it's just not part. It's not part of the oeuvre.
Well, you channel those impulses out through the harmony, melody, and rhythm that you create.
Oh, now we know somebody was stomping on Bird's toes. Is that what you're telling me?
Well, that or he probably had to, pee because he just had 14 double martinis.
Well, there was that too.
You know, there's many things. He was a genius that was way ahead of his time, and he was also an addict and. Society still doesn't look good on people like that. I think.
No, it's interesting that you would bring. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard not to when talking about Charlie Parker. But we had several months ago. I covered the story. That was last year, I guess, about the one day last year in Huntington, West Virginia, which is not that big a town at all, when the entire emergency response system was completely overwhelmed by. Overdoses. Apparently, a bad batch had got into town that was a little bit of heroin and a whole bunch of fentanyl and a nice kicker of carfentanil, you know, elephant trank.
Yeah, 100 times stronger than fentanyl.
Right. And you had people ODing left and right. Well, in an attempt to follow up and do real, honest-to-goodness, no-kidding journalism, the Charleston Gazette, the state newspaper, tried to see, well, okay, what happened after that? And guess what? Out of all the people who OD'd and survived, not one, I mean not one, Clarity, was referred to treatment.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And yeah. Part of that is because I think out of the total number, 17 of them were hospitalized. And as soon as they came to enough, they walked away AMA, against medical advice.
Yeah, of course.
Because, you know, we've still got such a stigma attached to it that people are justifiably afraid of what will happen to them.
Well, have you heard what Oregon is proposing now?
No.
No criminal offense for... being busted for possession of drugs, but beefing up our treatment system and doing, you know, what do they call it, deferment, because the jails are full of addicts or crimes committed by addicts, you know, whatever. But they figure it's cheaper to give people treatment, even as things are that. Not everybody makes it through first time or whatever, that it's cheaper than that than putting them in a state prisons, which they're all pretty much full with all the mandatory minimum stuff, you know.
We are finally getting ourselves in, and I don't know what the outcome of this is. We're finally getting ourselves in a real trick box over our war on
drugs.
Tough on crime.
Yeah, war on drugs. Well, and that's back to what I said. We don't have compassion for the 30% of humanoids that don't produce enough natural endorphins to feel good. So they're always going to be looking for something to help them feel good. Contrary to the, you know, the sin and shame that we use, you know, as far as addiction and drug abuse. But
I have to interrupt you. Is that what it really is? Is it 30% of human beings don't produce enough natural endorphins to just be okay?
I heard that from a prominent Dutch scientist. Yeah, and they don't, you know, they treat it more, you know, sanely. And they don't look at drugs as being it's a medical drug or it's a illicit drug. It's still a drug that people are using to, you know, make counter shape reality so that they can deal with it.
Well, that's I don't doubt it. It wouldn't surprise me. I happened to catch a few minutes of CNN's History of Comedy. It's one of those programs that they run now instead of, you know, actually doing news. And it was interesting, and it was about, you know, the dark side of comedy, I guess. So they had the original footage of somebody on NBC announcing the death of John Belushi. And then they had an extensive examination of, you know, Richard Pryor. And then Richard Lewis talked about all his years as an alcoholic and a drug addict. And Bobcat Goldthwait mourned the loss of Robin Williams.
Yeah.
And, you know, the fact that, you know, that all that boundless energy that you saw on stage came at a cost off stage.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it makes sense to me that, I mean, if you're a marathoner, if you've got the energy to go out and run 26 continuous miles,
yeah,
you can't be expected to just, oh, I don't know, get done and go and mow 2 acres.
Absolutely.
You have to come down.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for a lot of people in the performance arts, I'm sure you've seen it in music. You certainly know of it historically.
I know it personally. Yeah.
And or personally.
Yeah.
You know, all that adrenal endorphin energy that you have to crank up in order to make a shit ton of people happy for a couple of hours. Well, when it's done, it's really hard to just pack up everything and go home and go to bed.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's nothing I can really speak to, but except to say that, you know, back in the years when I was convinced that maybe there was theater in my future, because I loved it. But, you know, mm-hmm. when the play's over and you just sit down and you take off all the makeup, there's just this the energy remains.
Yeah.
And you got to find some way to get it out of you.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to, there's a book out there called Hellraisers. At least the version of it that I have on Kindle makes it look like it was kind of slapped together. But nonetheless, it's a history of Peter O'Toole, Richard Harris, Richard Burton, and why can I never remember the other guy's name? But it's just a study in substance abuse.
Yeah. Well, what I was going to say about my Buddhist teacher is she spoke a lecture I watched today. She said that 95% of ER visits after daytime are for people that are too drunk or drugs or both, and that if they didn't have people that were, you know, self-medicating or, you know, that they would be able to deal reasonably with the people come in with heart attacks and strokes and cuts and automobile accidents. Of course, a lot of the automobile accidents are people get too drunk and then get behind the wheel of a car. Yeah, we are not reckoning with, you know, the weaknesses of humans. We're replacing, you know, material. You know, we said, okay, here's materialism. Here's a shiny house, a shiny car, whatever. You know, and be happy now. And it's like, well, that didn't work. You know, so I fill myself up with food. Well, that didn't work. And your experience is now that you got to find something else to stuff in your soul, you know, because you love to eat.
Yeah, that's probably I do. I absolutely do love it.
Yeah, and my cousin's husband has had his stomach removed.
Ouch.
Yeah, because he had so many gastric issues from being real heavy. And he's suffering mightily now because he's on a liquid protein diet.
I was able to find some real pleasure in, you know, getting out. I mean, I got an acre to play with, so it's not like I don't have anything to do. But you got to keep it in perspective. Enjoy the moment, and then when it's time to go out and work and sweat and, you know, whatever.
Oh yeah, well, the karma yoga, you know, do that too. Yeah.
And it would be nice. What's going to be a pain in the ass, just to be personal about this, is when cold weather comes and I got nothing to mow or weed eat. Because that's long about October.
And you take up knitting.
That's not going to give me the cardio that I need.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe you should pick up the trombone or something.
Is that particularly aerobic? I mean, do we do curls with the trombone, Clarity? I mean,
you can put a 5-pound barbell on your slide.
And I have a feeling I will be run out of this house for cause.
Oh, I'm sorry, Agnes. I didn't mean to give him a bad idea.
Yeah.
I don't know. Music can heal just about anything. Do you have enough room to do some aerobic dancing?
Not a lot of room, and 80-year-old house. Not sure how the foundations would hold.
Oh, you might shake it down.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want me getting going real good. So, I don't know. I'll vigorous walking or vigorous. I don't know when it's 15 degrees. You got to walk pretty briskly if you want to stay warm.
Yeah, and you don't get enough snow to do cross-country skiing, do you?
Not even snowshoes.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Just the damn cold.
Yeah, just damn hateful cold.
Well, you know that West Virginia is the curviest part of the United States.
I would not doubt that in the least.
Out of all 50 states, it's got the most up and down in it.
And the most bizarre borders.
Yeah, the original gerrymander.
Yeah, well, I mean, West Virginia is the only state in the union that has a shape like an obscene gesture.
I never thought about that.
Yeah, if you use your right hand and you leave the middle finger up and the thumb out, and you pull down the two fingers and you tuck the little finger in, you've got West Virginia.
Yeah, you know, you're right. You know, the other oddity, I think, on as far as maps go, the state of Jalisco in Mexico.
Yeah.
Looks like a bird standing on its head, like a crow or something.
Okay, I'm gonna have to go look that up. The other one, there's a couple of other little anomalies out there. The state of Delaware has a dome on it. If you look at a map of Delaware, you'll find that it has this, you know, perfect little. Half-circle dome. Go figure. And, of course, there's some reason for it, and somebody probably threatened bloodshed.
The mound people.
But I'll figure out something as the winter comes on. And oh, I don't know, maybe some hiking, trekking, walking around.
Yeah, walking is great. You know, Malloy walks every day.
He swims, too.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm a little too far from civilization. I would love to go and just do...
Yeah, swimming's the ultimate exercise. It tones you really. Yeah.
And plus, I could horrify... untold numbers of West Virginians, you know, with my speedo.
Oh God, get the eye bleach. Get
yeah,
the
I,
eye
right. Bleach. Yeah, it's the you know, no, that's straight up Colonel Kurtz. The horror.
Yeah. And you're probably fish belly white too, right?
Oh, I burn under the refrigerator lamp. Everybody knows that. I'm blinding. I mean, God help us all if I get to some sunny climate and the shirt comes off, it'll be like, you know, Jesus, cover him up. You know, it'll be pitiful. It'll be, and the thing is, you know, leave it off for long enough, and I immediately turn lobster red, and then I'm back to just, you know, blistering white again. There's no tanning.
You're melanin challenged, Bob.
It has taken 54 years for from the sleeve area of my arm down to my hands to turn a sort of a light copper color with a shitload of freckles.
Yeah, you just freckle over.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm so freaking Northern European. It's not even funny. It's, you know, it's where the propensity for collecting triglycerides and cholesterol comes from too. Doing battle
well,
with my own genetics.
Well, you know, we all have to have something we want around us, and at least you know what works for you.
Or I'm trying to find out. Yep.
Yeah. Well, damn, Bob, it was good to touch base with you, and I didn't mean to be such a stranger, but I just didn't feel like I had anything of merit and warmth to share with the world. I didn't want to just come on here and whine about how evil the demons are, because the demons are there to teach us lessons too,
and to make us think. Yeah, exactly. When Agnes and I were watching John Kelly this morning, and she said, "There's more at work here than," because I just thought he was uncomfortable. I'd be uncomfortable if I was sitting next to Trump.
Well, I'm sure all those generals have big portfolios of Lockheed Martin stock stashed away somewhere.
Isn't that part of the profit sharing program? I mean, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And those stocks don't go down.
Well, Clarity, stick to the flats for a couple of weeks and,
yeah, I will try to be a good girl.
And we will, we'll talk soon, and you always bring your A game. Don't you worry about it.
Well, I just don't want to burn people out on my view of the world.
Well, no worries at all. Clarity, you take care.
I will. Bless you too, Bob.
Bye now. The one and only Clarity calling from the great Northwest. Yeah, I see her sunrise photos on Twitter every day. Okay, there's an answer of sorts. Randy in PA points out the Dome of Delaware resulted in a colonial land dispute between Delaware, Pennsylvania, and Maryland. Well, they were pretty much always at the ready to go at each other's throats back then. I mean, the whole Mason-Dixon line thing, right? Hey, thank you. Thank you very kindly to Alma for keeping us going, working on getting a head start on tomorrow, on August. Thank you, Alma. Thank you indeed. A little bit of breaking news as we head toward the last 5 minutes or so of the program. Remember when the story broke? I mean, I was in D.C. at the time, about Uday and the meeting with the Russian lawyer. That he, you know, there was nothing to it. I can hardly remember it. It's quickly receding from the into the dim mists and fogs of memory. All of that stuff. As it turns out. There was something familiar about the statement, the written statement that was released Uday, Don Jr.'s Udi, over his signature. Well, there's a reason for that. On July 8th, as Air Force One winged its way back from the monumental embarrassment of the United States that was the G20, Marcus Aurelius himself, Comrade Kumquat, personally dictated the statement in which Don Jr. said, "We primarily discussed a program about the adoption of Russian children." Mm-hmm. And then provided it to the New York Times. You know, the failing New York Times. Not failing enough to not give them a made-up statement, right? And so then the floodgates opened, and more accounts and more accounts and more accounts came out of you know, just how wrong that statement was. And everybody came to realize pretty quickly that it was the most transparent tissue of pure mendacious crap. Which should sort of like be a DNA signature that it had come directly from Trump, and it did. The Washington Post writing, "The extent of the president's personal intervention in his son's response, the details of which have not previously been reported, adds to a series of actions that Trump has taken that some advisors fear could place him and some members of his inner circle in legal jeopardy." One anonymous commentator from the president's staff of advisors said, "This was unnecessary." Now someone can claim he's the one who attempted to mislead. Somebody can argue the president is saying he doesn't want you to say the whole truth. That's another way of describing a little something-something referred to in legal circles as obstruction of justice, or maybe witness tampering. So now it becomes a race between Bob Mueller and Donald Trump to see if Bob Mueller can uncover enough evidence to actually make the Republican Congress take their constitutional oath seriously, or whether Trump will try to fire him first. Watch this space. Listen to this space. Yeah. So, That's the program for this evening. It's time to shut down and get everything uploaded and cross-posted and all the things that have to go on between immediately after this program. Thank you to those of you who jumped in and helped us get started on August fundraising a night early. Thank you, Carol in Oregon. Thank you, Alma. Thank you, Glenn. Thanks for kicking in on the vacation. The holiday. Thank you, Paul, for that. Big thanks over the weekend. To others who helped us finish off last week. And to work on the trip away. Thank you to Mark. Thank you to Fab. Thank you very, very kindly indeed. And thank you also to... thank you to Dave. David, thank you very kindly. Dave in Ohio, who kicked in to meet Scott's challenge. Said, hope this gets you and Agnes a well-deserved and long-overdue vacation. Thank you, Dave. Thank you very, very much. So, and last thing. As usual, when I sub for Malloy, the horn stream and the head on live stream will keep going. But I'm going to ask, as has become my habit, that as many people as can, please listen to the program via Progressive Voices on TuneIn. It's really nice to see Mike's numbers do well over on the trending list at TuneIn. So that's the way we do that. So thanks, everybody. Have a wonderful evening. Back again at 6 o'clock tomorrow evening. Heck, back again in under an hour on Progressive Voices, The Mike Malloy Show. Thanks for all of you who keep all of this going. Thanks for spending your precious finite time engaged in the program. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, midweek utility pinch hit chat room moderator Steve from Georgistan. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook, and at Coal River MTN on Twitter. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Back in a little bit, y'all.